We're going to stay with politics on the programme this morning, which is going to dominate the majority of the show today, because a political crisis is possible over reckless behaviour of mainstream unionist parties. That's the warning coming from Sinn Féin's Mitchell McLaughlin. He says unionists have presently obstructed the implementation of the Haas proposals, and he claims the refusal to deal with the past parades and flags or honour earlier agreements such as the Longcash Maze project presents an increasing threat to the sustainability of the Assembly. Sinn Féin's Mitchell McLaughlin is with us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
An increasing threat to the sustainability of the Assembly. Now, is that a bluff?
No, I think that there is a general dissatisfaction with the rate of progress in the Assembly, and I think that as politicians we're obliged to examine why that is. Now, in my article, I have revisited the referendum.
You wrote this article for Eamon Malley's website, by the way, eamonmalley.com.
Yeah, and they have a discussion which I find quite interesting and stimulating, Voices for Peace. And I approach this on the basis, and it's a long-held view, that we need to be partners for peace. In other words, Sinn Féin's presence in the Assembly and our ability to deliver on the expectations of the people we represent, similar to other parties, depends on us being partners for peace. If we have simply replaced the war in our streets with another variation of conflict and disagreement, yeah, then, we will not deal with the past, and we haven't dealt with it yet. And if we don't deal with the past, we won't reach the future.
Yeah, but when you say a threat to the sustainability of the Assembly, those are strong words and ill-advised unless you mean it. And I would put it to you that Gerry Kelly last year, of course, he talked about a crisis in power sharing. Unions dismissed it. Everything trundled on. Is this a game of words where you're threatening, this veiled threat of, the Assembly might not survive if you don't get your own way, and then the Assembly survives?
Well, in the first instance, I give two very specific examples for people to consider. And, people can agree or disagree with my analysis. But I pointed out that five different parties at the present time in the Assembly almost exclusively claim their votes from the unionist electorate. But only NI21 could claim to give unambiguous support to the principles which underpin the Good Friday Agreement. The other four parties, it would appear, are determined to unpick and unpack that agreement in their approach to these substantial issues. And if we look at Haas, which is the most recent example, and then we look at the Longcash Maze project, which was such a substantial agreement that it found its way into the programme for government and was voted on by all of the MLAs at Stormont. And then in a letter from America, it was dismissed by Peter Robinson. So those kinds of acts of either bad faith or a lack of strategic vision about how we can move from conflict to an agreed future, I think do provide clear evidence that the two governments need to insert themselves and to make it clear that they will guarantor to the people who voted for the Good Friday Agreement that it will be delivered and acted upon.
So work through it within the Assembly and stop threatening to pull out of the Assembly. Stop threatening to bring down the Assembly. It's not the first time Sinn Féin have done it. And presumably it's not going to be the last. And I'll tell you what, this is a question probably on behalf of your own electorate, never mind anybody else. If you're hinting at doing it, then do it.
Well,
but don't threaten
all,
to do it every 2 minutes.
And you should read the article carefully because you won't find any semblance of a threat. What I did
increasing
say
increasing threat to the sustainability of the Assembly.
Yeah,
you're
but
threatening
we're talking
that
over
the Assembly
could
fall.
Could I just answer your point?
Yeah.
Which is, what's actually in the article is a question. What now are the two governments considering in the face of mounting evidence that the reckless behaviour of mainstream unionist parties could precipitate a genuine and full-scale political crisis?
But what does that mean?
Now, that's someone who wants to see the agreement work, and I'm asking, why haven't the two governments inserted themselves? Why indeed has the British government, even as I speak, endorsed the Haas proposals for dealing with the past?
Yeah, but
and
Mitchell,
I do think that they have a responsibility to come forward.
But Mitchell, I need to understand what you mean when you write on eamonmalley.com a genuine and full-scale political crisis. What does that mean?
It means that four parties in the Assembly act in an obstructionist way, even on issues that they claim to be extremely exercised about, such as flags, such as parades, such as the past. And we find that when we bring in outside expertise and we get an objective assessment of what needs to be done, that unionists block it,
sure.
that they but start that, the unpicket. Now, that type of... Well, you see, if we agree on a very simple proposition that we need to be partners in this power-sharing agreement to make it work, to meet all the different aspirations
that.
Of our society, then you can't take that approach.
Well, I hear that, but that's your analysis of the situation.
Well, that's what I'm offering, well, yes.
But I'm still trying to understand when you describe something as potentially precipitating a full-scale political crisis. What does a political crisis actually mean beyond words, beyond positioning, beyond, you know, politicking? Does it mean anything? What is a political crisis in this country?
Well, a political crisis would be, not what we are threatening to do, but what you are implying. And let me make it clear that, you see, whatever time unionist parties decide to engage in these issues, Sinn Féin will be there at the table
what
already.
Is a political
We're not
crisis?
Leaving the table. But what would be a crisis? If the entire organ of the government in the Assembly gets to the point where it's completely paralysed because of the polar positions being adopted by the parties, then that would be a crisis for everyone. And what I'm posing as a question, before we get to that point...
Are we close?
What are the two governments proposing to do about it?
Are we close
to that point?
I mean,
they have
to
be aware of it. I beg your pardon?
Are we close to that point?
Well, I think people would agree that, we are... You know, if you saw the debate last week on local government reform, one of the most substantial and significant reforms getting brought forward by the Assembly, what was the debate dominated about? Flags. My God. You know, that's the kind of downward spiral, in my view, that would give people cause to begin to doubt that we can make the Good Friday Agreement work.
So what happens if nothing changes? If these parties continue as you claim they are behaving? I want to understand if Sinn Féin is bluffing here. Because again, Gerry Kelly talked about a crisis last year. Nothing changed. So what happens if they don't change? What will Sinn Féin do?
Well, I think that what we are doing is trying to act responsibly. We're trying to kind of point to the direction of travel as being a negative direction,
so
and one that will not benefit anyone. We are also pointing to a positive alternative. And I mean, I'm reminding people in the article, and I'm sure you've read it, about equality and parity of esteem, two issues which should threaten no one and which should give sustenance and support to everyone. I've also pointed to this fact, which I think might point where the fault line is. In the post-referendum analysis, 93% of nationalists and Republicans voted in favour of the agreement. However, unionists were deeply divided with a much smaller majority, maybe 55% voting in favour.
What you didn't, Mitchell,
I think that continues to this day.
What you didn't point to, Mitchell McLaughlin, was Sinn Féin looking over their shoulders at dissidents, undermining progress, as some unionists would say it, with the likes of last summer's Republican commemoration in Castlederg. You didn't point to any of that. You just forget about all of that,
I don't forget about anything. Not a thing. But, you know, let me say this. We're coming up to elections in the summer, and I look forward to them. And I look forward to the dissidents putting forward their independent candidates. And I hope, you know, that will actually point to them in a positive direction. But have I any concerns about who will get the mandate to continue? I'm quite certain that Sinn Féin will quite decisively deal with any perceived threat from dissidents. We are not in the least concerned about that, except, not in terms of our own electoral support, except in terms of the damage that they could do, both in terms of hurting people, killing people, and going to prison. And we think that, that type of politics and that type of political violence should end and should be dismissed.
Sinn Féin
out of hand. And I think the electorate will do so.
Sinn Féin have been saying for a while now that the leading unionist parties are too preoccupied with the extremes. And the unionist parties would say very much back to Sinn Féin, well, that's hypocritical because you're worried about the dissidents. So you're each levelling a similar charge against each other.
No, well, I think let's bring it back to us. And my party's approach is that while we didn't get everything we want in the proposals, we think that they point the way forward to taking that whole issue, and including, you know, not just the past, but the flags and the parades, off the political agenda, since they're all negative kind of issues that must be dealt with, and we fail to deal with them up to now. So my party, straightforward, we want to engage on the basis of those proposals.
Yeah.
Now, people can say whatever they like about dissidents, but that's not us reflecting any kind of defensiveness
and,
at all.
And listen, you lot
about
can,
our mandate. You, and you know, we're quite happy to go forward and encourage the dissidents to become involved in politics.
You know what,
and pretty, we'll take them on at that, and quite happily so.
It's pretty clear from this interview, Mitchell McLaughlin, there is no crisis. This is Sinn Féin again, stamping its feet, should I say. And when you use the word like crisis and you talk about a genuine and full-scale political crisis, you're posturing, you're positioning, but you have no game plan as to what you will do if there is no change.
Well, I think you're going to go for your headline, and that's your business. I'll read it out again. I'm saying that the direction of travel and the reckless behaviour of mainstream unionist parties could, that word is in there, and I'm sure you've seen it, could precipitate a genuine and full-scale political crisis. Why do I say that? Because I believe
there's a crisis every day in Northern Ireland.
On the whole,
there's a crisis every day in Northern Ireland.
Well, you can downgrade it. You're entitled to your opinion. I'm not disagreeing with you, but that's my opinion, and people should engage on it. What I've said is that the Haas proposals on dealing with legacy issues were a compromise that offered the best hope for bringing closure to victims and families. And I'm pointing out, all of the parties going into Haas would have argued that this was a priority. Now, how come the unions parties walked away from it?
Is the
how
assembly-
come they're blocking it if it's such a priority?
Okay, maybe I'll, just as the final question, maybe I'll ask it a different way. Is the assembly safe or is the assembly at risk? I'm not asking you, you're bringing down the assembly. I'm saying, is it such? Are we heading so close to a crisis that the assembly's at risk?
Well, I think that there is a risk. I don't think it's going to happen today. I don't think it's going to happen next week. I don't think it'll happen coming up to the election, since all of the parties will have a focus on the upcoming election. What I'm saying is that this conflict, which has been brought into the Assembly, where, you know, in a so-called power-sharing arrangement, what we have is a clear division between the unionist parties and their approach, which is universally negative, and other parties, including Sinn Féin, who are attempting to move the agenda forward and to deliver on the programme for government.
So to be clear,
now, that is a recipe for problems unless and until the two governments begin to insert themselves into the progress.
So
they can't be bystanders, they can't be spectators, and they can't pretend that this is no kind of responsibility.
And so to be clear, and I'm trying to get your words rather than mine, to be clear, when you talk then about a full-scale political crisis, you're saying that the Assembly is at risk. Is that fair?
I'm saying that the present balance of arguments, which is universally from the unionist side to do with the past, is no way of delivering on the future. And if we can't address those needs of our society, then this arrangement is in trouble, and the two governments will be drawn into it. I'm suggesting an initiative before that happens.
And when you say this arrangement's in trouble, the Assembly's in trouble, is that what you're saying?
You know, I know you're looking for a headline.
I'm looking for clarity.
I mean, this may not satisfy you, but my...
It's rather than me interpreting it. I'm asking a straight question.
I don't want you to interpret it other than what's in the article. And what's in the article is a very clear message to the two governments. This, at the present time, isn't working. Are you going to stand by and spectate until a crisis develops, or are you going to insert yourselves before them? Now, I think that's a straightforward answer to your question.
Okay, Mitch McLaughlin, thank you very much.
Listening to that,
Gregory Campbell from the DUP. What do you make of that?
Well, good morning, Stephen. It seems to me that it's Sinn Féin trying to up the ante. And, I don't know quite exactly what Sinn Féin are playing at. We have, on the one hand, and if you look at this constructively, look at the past couple of weeks where you had Peter Robinson and Martin McGuinness out in America batting for Northern Ireland, trying to bring more jobs here. And it's not the first time. They've been on numerous occasions on visits overseas to try and bring business here. When you have business in the Assembly in various committees constructively working to try and make progress in how best we can promote business and education, health, roads, all the other issues in the Assembly. So you have that going on by all parties contributing to that positive contribution. But at the same time, as you have that constructive approach on the one hand, you then seem to have, and nobody can quite analyse why this is the case, whether it's appearing to want to be hard to the dissidents or whatever, but at the same time as the constructive approach, you have this destructive approach. And, I await someone's analysis as to why they would have a Mr. Facing Both Ways attitude at the same time.
Well, what is Peter Robinson's relationship like with Martin McGuinness at present?
It's a business-like relationship. You've asked me that question before and I've given you that answer.
It's a lot worse this year than it was last year, isn't it?
Well, you know, they have a job to do. And, you know, people vote for them and expect them to do
that. That's a statement of fact. The relationship has deteriorated compared to, let's be accurate, 2 years ago, hasn't it? Deteriorated quite significantly. Is that fair?
Well, they did business 2 years ago and they do business today. But look, Stephen...
That wasn't an answer to the question.
Well, it might not have been the one you wanted.
Has the relationship between Peter and Martin deteriorated significantly?
They did business before and they do business now. But, Stephen, look... Here is what we need to talk about now. Mitchell McLaughlin tried to infer that there was a crisis in the making. Now, what we do know, whatever about the politics of it, what we do know is that on issues like, for example, welfare reform, and we've raised this issue on a number of occasions, we and the other parties, and I mean everybody contributed to making very constructive, progressive proposals to the British government to get variations and flexibilities in the system. But we're at the point now, right now, in March 2014, where we, the people of Northern Ireland, are being charged £5 million every single month. A total over the next 12 months, because it ratchets up each month, of about £100 million. Now, that's a crisis, because over the course of the next 5 years, it's going to ratchet up to almost £1 billion. Now, if we're talking crises, there's a crisis. Now, what we need to do is we need to grasp that nettle.
But that's also part of the relationship between the DUP and Sinn Féin, which you have a responsibility.
Which we are trying to discharge, and this interview is part of it. We've got to grasp that nettle. We can't afford to lose £1 billion over the next 5 years. And remember, implicit within that £1 billion, there are also 1,500 people who stand to lose their jobs because their employment is directly connected to administering welfare reform in GB. And GB will simply say, if this goes on for another 6 months or another year, that they're going to withdraw jobs and reallocate them.
And Alex Maskey has told us that Sinn Féin are not prepared to accept the welfare benefit cuts that would be imposed on their electorate. They're standing up tall, they're fighting them off, and presumably he's saying he's doing more than you lot are doing for the people in your community. They're simply not accepting them.
Well, you see, unfortunately, we can't say we're simply not accepting them. Because what we can say is...
The DUP said things like that for many years.
Hold on. We cannot say, because if the people at the other end of the supply chain, i.e. the British government, who turn on and off the tap, say, that's fine, if you don't want to accept it, that's okay, but here's the cost, here's the charge, then you can still say, we're not accepting it, but there is a price for everybody to pay. Now, all of us have negotiated, including the DUP minister. Remember, it was the DUP minister who negotiated the flexibilities within the system that we now have.
And you didn't get what you want.
Well, we got a significant amount of what we wanted, and we're now at the position where there are tens of millions of pounds per year going to be charged, deducted from the block grant, if we don't move. And there are going to be 1,500 people who are going to lose their jobs. Now, last week, we were fighting, and I and Sinn Féin and others were fighting, to try and safeguard the jobs of 300 people at the Driver and Vehicle Agency. Now, do we want to compound that fivefold by losing another 1,500 jobs? We've got the flexibilities. Let's bring it to the point now.
Tell you what, the British government have got some leverage over the DUP, haven't they?
Well, they haven't got much leverage when they had to agree to a whole series of flexibilities that other people in the rest of the UK didn't get. You know, that's the point we need to remember. We have flexibilities in Northern Ireland that they don't have in England, Scotland and Wales.
Tell me this. Does it worry you at all when Sinn Féin and Mitchell McLaughlin talk about a genuine and full-scale political crisis? Potentially a genuine and full-scale political crisis. And you heard me when I was asking him today. He did concede that meant the Assembly could be, not today, not tomorrow, he said, but it could lead to the Assembly being at risk.
Well, whenever I hear that, Stephen, I think to myself, what gallery are they playing to? Have you done an interview with Mitchell McLaughlin in the last 2, 3, or 4 years?
Yes.
Where he has come out with a reference or a criticism or an allegation that could be the case? No, you haven't. And I haven't heard it either. But it's funny that now, within 8 weeks of an election, that we're hearing this.
Well,
now,
he's clearly tying it to a lack of progress on Haas and the Haas proposals. And he is clearly implying that if you don't go back to Haas, there's a real problem in Stormont in the Assembly. Now, what is your response to that?
It is a very clear response, Stephen. A very, very simple, straightforward response that Mitchell McLaughlin and anybody else in Sinn Féin should be able to understand. We have to resolve the issues that people were trying to grapple with under Haas. Sinn Féin don't have to get a Haas-type agreement with Richard Haas or Megan O'Sullivan. They have to get some form of agreement with us. No, what part of that?
It was Peter Robinson brought him in.
Sorry?
It was Peter Robinson brought Haas in.
Yes, that's right. We worked long and hard to try and get a resolution. Now, it didn't work in December.
And for clarity,
but it needs to work now.
For clarity, just because I'm running out of time, are the Haas proposals dead in the water?
Those proposals have been and gone. Now, the problem hasn't gone.
Are they dead in the water?
They've been and gone. They've been and gone. We now need to build on whatever progress was made and clinch a deal at some point in the future. That's what we need to do, and we need to keep at it. We don't want to build a crisis into what we have at the moment.
Okay, Gregory, thank you very much indeed. We've about 3 minutes left, unfortunately, this morning. The commentators, Alex Kane and Brian Rowan, with me today. Alex and Brian, morning to you both.
Yeah.
Morning, Alex, your interpretation of what you've just heard.
It was just a standard ding-dong. The really interesting thing about listening to these debates over the past year, particularly since the May, Stephen, is that both parties, both Sinn Féin and the DUP, seem entirely oblivious of the other's interests, of the other's concerns. Mitchell blames the DUP for everything, and unionism in general. Gregory blames Sinn Féin. And if they want to talk, do you know what would be quite easy? Instead of all this nonsense of bringing people in and, you know, arranging, if the two of them, if Peter Robinson, Martin McGuinness, a few of their key advisors, actually sat down on two or three of the big issues and actually see if they can reach some sort of agreement and then move forward. But going into the Assembly chamber to discuss welfare reform when they haven't even agreed on it, that's actually what sends the warning bells running through the whole electorate here. Because when they hear these arguments, when Mitchell talks about a crisis, there isn't a crisis in the sense that the Assembly is going to collapse tomorrow, but there is a crisis, Stephen, if at the next election a minority of people vote for the Assembly, because it will be stripped of authority,
Brian,
at that point.
Well, you heard what Mitchell McLaughlin was saying. He wasn't saying that the Assembly was at risk of falling today or tomorrow or next week. But what he's saying is that's the potential path we're on. And you've also had Declan Kearney warn recently of the danger of impasse and standoff becoming vacuum. And this is all about for how long is there a credibility attached to the politics at Stormont. You had the fallout over Maes Longcash. You've had the sham fight, if you like, over the on-the-run scheme. You have the standoff over Haas. Now, I know that the party leaders and a number of the Haas negotiators are meeting later today. I know the judge who is dealing with the OTR review is in today to speak to senior politicians and police officers. But I think the big issue is that the past continues to poison the politics of the present.
But can Sinn Féin have any credibility if they keep on issuing these threats and do nothing?
Well, what they're saying needs to be done is that we need to make progress on the past, Stephen. And people have warned previously that there is the danger of the past tripping up the politics of the present. What if Peter Robinson had followed through and resigned a couple of weeks ago? Where would we be today? Okay. So until we address these issues, these big issues of the past, they are going to continue to poison the Stormont politics of the present.
And just finally, Alex Kane, your analysis of Billy Hutchison and what he had to say this morning.
To be honest, Stephen, I don't think he did himself any favours at all. I mean, I think it is astonishing, you know, that someone who does say he regrets all deaths, but when you ask him a specific question about to the family of the young men he killed, it's not yet time to apologise. I don't get that. It was time to apologise, particularly since after 40 years, he suddenly says, we did nothing without intelligence. We had no other option. I mean, he makes it sound like there was actually a reason for killing them, and that's why, you know, you were right to push them and all of that, but that's why, you know, I find it extraordinary that given what he said, he can say, oh, well, no, it's not yet time to apologize. Whenever is the time to apologize for killing someone, particularly innocent people with no connection with any organization whatsoever? You just decided to kill them. When is the time to apologize for that?
Okay, Alex Keane, Brian Rowan, thank you very much indeed.